Solaris subscribers. Here's Harry Blaser again, and today we have a very special guest, Ronnie Cummins, who is the co-founder and international director of the Organic Consumers Association. And you also have a Mexico affiliate, correct?
Yes.
And that's known as Via Organica, is that correct?
Yes, which stands for the Organic Way.
So, Ronnie, you know about Catherine Austin Fitz. I don't know that you know much about me, but what's important is that we find out about you and your efforts, because you represent a group that I respect a lot and have supported. And you have a very, very valuable website, plus quite a large staff, from what I can see, that's doing a lot of good work. So let's start off by, if you don't mind, telling us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, well, I came out of the 1960s civil rights and anti-war movement. I grew up in Texas, and I became a full-time activist in the late 60s, 1967, to be exact. And I've been basically carrying on ever since then, the last 50 years. And I've worked in all aspects of social change and the movement, but the last 20 years, I've especially focused on food and farming and climate issues. And the Organic Consumers Association, our focus has been to basically organize consumers to reject industrial agriculture and corporate agribusiness, and to open their mind to the alternatives, organic and grass-fed and what we now call regenerative food and farming. And over the last 15 years or so, it's become clear to a lot of us that we better get serious about looking at climate change and global warming. And we learned that actually our food, farming, and land use are half of the problem, and that not only do we need to get away from fossil fuels and have solar energy and wind energy, renewable, as the norm, but we've got to get away from our current food and farming and land use system that is really part of the problem. You know, in the last 50 years, fossil fuels have put so much greenhouse gases up into the atmosphere that they've disrupted the climate. But at the same time, industrial agriculture and our, you know, basically chemical intensive, energy intensive food system has doubled the problem. And so we need to get things back under control. And the nice thing about having a climate-friendly sort of next stage of organic, regenerative type of food and farming is that it's good for our health, too. It's good for the environment, good for small farmers. You know, the animals are treated better. And, you know, when you look around the world, most poor people are actually rural people, small farmers. And that's where you have the most social conflict and war and violence. And so if we can create rural prosperity in the rural areas of the world, we can go a long way towards solving a lot of the other problems we're facing.
I want to use you as kind of a expert on organic, if you don't mind. And so what is organic? How would you describe it to our listeners?
Well, organic is the way that farming has been carried out for most of the, you know, 10,000 years that humans have been farming. We've been raising animals for about 30,000 years, but we've been farming for about 10,000. And throughout most of that 10,000-year period, farming practices were in tune with the seasons, relatively natural. We didn't use things like pesticides. We didn't have things like genetically engineered food. Animals were grazed outdoors. Smalls were farmed. Even when I was a child, if you went to the grocery store, almost everything in the grocery store was organic, and it came from about within a 100-mile radius. But at the end of the Second World War, unfortunately, we entered into what was called the Green Revolution, which was a propaganda term, really. But we started using more and more chemicals We started using hybrid seeds designed for yield rather than environmental sustainability and nutrition. We started taking animals off the land and concentrating them in these factory farm installations. And the neighborhood grocery stores and farmers markets gave way to bigger and bigger stores, and finally the advent of the big box stores. Meanwhile, food, you know, which used to be fairly natural and nutritious, became more and more processed. Fast food, which was a rarity 50 years ago, became very common. You know, and, you know, we always had the evening meal when I was growing up with the whole family there on the weekends. We had extended family members over. A lot of that has gone out the window now, and half of the food dollars that Americans spend are on eating out in restaurants, and it's usually junk food. And if you look at the diet of Americans today, the overwhelming majority of the food people eat is highly processed. And it might taste good, you know, your first few bites, but look at what it's doing to our public health. We spend $3.5 trillion a year on health care in the United States, by far the largest in the world per capita. And public health experts and nutritionists point out that 40% of that 3.5 million is caused by eating terrible food and eating too much sugar and salt and the chemicals that are added into food. So we are a fast food nation. We have supersized ourselves. We have put all the animals into factory farms. We're now genetically engineering half of the crops out there in the fields. And we basically have driven small farmers, most of them, off the land. And we have these giant agribusiness conglomerates that have taken over. And we don't measure food anymore like we used to. Like on my grandparents' organic farm when I was growing up in East Texas, you know, they were concerned about nutrition and being able to provide literally everything that a family would want to eat. You know, that changed over time. Now farms they're talking about how many tons per acre of commodity crops, soybeans and corn, they can raise. And, of course, all this is heavily subsidized by taxpayers. The factory farm system would collapse tomorrow if people knew how unhealthy it was and if the soy and corn farmers weren't being subsidized to basically do the wrong thing.
So what you've described is what I would call a popular definition of organic, but there is actually a official USDA organic standard. And I'd like for you to talk about that, the history of that. Where did it come from? How did it evolve? And how would you compare that standard when it started, you know, some 20 years ago, whatever it was, with today?
Yes. Well, basically, like I said before, for most of human history, foods were grown naturally and organically. But then with the advent of the chemical farming era, more and more chemicals began being used, and animal drugs and so on and so forth. And traditional farmers were appalled at this, and they started talking about how we have to distinguish ourselves or differentiate ourselves from this industrial agriculture and corporate agribusiness. So the term organic was coined in the 1930s. And this started catching on. And people at first, you know, organic farmers and ranchers, they knew exactly what organic meant. It meant you don't use chemical fertilizers, you don't use the pesticides, you raise the animals outside, you don't drug up the animals, and so on. So it was like a trust situation between farmers and consumers. But as the organic sector grew, it became clear that there were a lot of people who were using chemicals pretending to be organic. And so organic farmers started banding together. They set up nonprofit organizations in the early 1970s and started, you know, writing up the rules. The first one was California Certified Organic Farmers, but other people in other states did the same. So they basically drew up official rules of what constituted organic and what didn't. And they began organizing to police people claiming to be organic who weren't. And I think 12 states responded to lobbying by organic farmers and consumers to actually, you know, set up systems that it was the law to obey these state organic standards that the community had set up. And so this is the way most organic food was certified right up until the year 2002. What happened is back in 1990, the people had the brilliant idea of, well, we could grow the organic sector much faster if we had federal standards that were federal law and enforced strictly. And so Congress passed in 1990 the Organic Food Production Act, basically saying that there should be national organic standards uniform across all the states, and that there should be federal legislation delineating these standards, and that it would be a law, a crime, to violate these standards or to call your stuff organic when it wasn't. And it took 12 years from 1990 until 2002 to actually get final federal standards in place. These standards were not that different, actually, from the standards that states and different nonprofit certification, organic certification agencies had been using over the years. But it did make it a federal law. And before organic standards became law in 2002, the government put out proposed rules in the Federal Register on what they should be. And at the end of 1997, when they put out these proposed standards for organic, there was a tremendous uprising because the government, the USDA, at the behest of Monsanto and corporate agribusiness, they were trying to say that it'll be okay in organic to use genetic engineering. It'll be okay in organic to use toxic sewage sludge as fertilizer. It'll be okay in organic to use nuclear waste to irradiate food. All these things are okay. And the government was very surprised at the scale and the strength of the opposition that rose up. I was very active in that SOS Save Organic Standards campaign. In fact, that gave rise to the Organic Consumers Association. And there was so much pressure in the first 5 months of 1998 by consumers and by organic farmers and by people who were just outraged that the government backed down. The USDA backed down. The big corporations started to understand that if you ram down terrible organic standards down the throats of consumers, because there were already, you know, it was already a sizable market, a few billion dollars a year, it's going to harm your bottom line, your interests. It's going to discredit big food corporations. It'll discredit both Democrats and Republicans who support this. It makes the USDA look bad and so on. So the bottom line is that in May of 98, the government capitulated and said they weren't going to use GMOs or sewage sludge or radiation. And they realized that they needed to have some organic standards that were going to be fairly strict. Otherwise, they were going to just have a constant problem on their hands. So 2002 came along. The federal government implemented standards, which on the surface looked pretty good. And the organic sector started growing more and more. And that caused a lot of big supermarkets to start selling organic. You know, amazingly, Walmart became the biggest seller over time of organic food in the United States. A lot of big companies jumped into the act, General Mills and Campbell's and Danone yogurt and Cargill and many others, Purdue, Hormel, big companies start buying up organic brands and making sure that part of what they were selling was organic. But over time, what happened was that corporate agribusiness got stronger in the Organic Trade Association and in the organic industry, and they basically prevailed on the government to let them cut corners, break the rules, and so on. So you had developing as long as a dozen years ago, these factory farms milking thousands of cows three times a day that weren't even going out to pasture, you know, calling themselves organic. You know, you had these giant concentrated chicken operations with hundreds of thousands of chickens producing most of the eggs that had the organic label. Now, granted, these animals, for the most part, were being fed organic feed. And, you know, in some way, there was symbolic access to the outdoors or so on and so forth. But basically, they were gaming the system. And the other thing that started happening was as big companies like White Wave and Dean Foods got into organics, as they started importing cheap organic ingredients from overseas, from places like China. And often these ingredients or these products were not really organic. I'm going to move inside here. They were not organic, but the corruption in the system in those countries allowed them to say they were, and then the corruption in this country allowed them to come in. And so over the last 5 or 6 years, the whole controversy around can you trust organic has become a bigger and bigger issue. There have been exposés in the mass media and in the alternative media and so on. And so when people ask me today, well, can you really trust USDA organic? My answer is, yeah, for most things, you can still trust the label. Fruits, vegetables, you know, whole foods are typically, if they're organic and they're produced in the USA, they are organic. But when it comes to beef, for example, what we encourage people to do is to find 100% grass-fed beef, which is better than organic standards. And is, if you can find something certified by someone like American Grass-Fed Association, you can trust it. It's true. Or what more and more consumers have done is they're starting to buy locally. You know, and of course, buying local and organic or regional and organic is the best way to go. But by buying locally, people are getting to actually meet the farmers and ranchers who produce their food, often visiting these farms. And you can typically trust local organic farmers that are, you know, open and transparent with their customers. So, yes, you can still trust organic, but consumers need to be more vigilant, do their homework, and we have to realize that the government and both the Democrats and the Republicans have been guilty of this, are heavily under the influence of corporate agribusiness, chemical companies, pharmaceutical companies, big international grain trading companies like Cargill, and they don't really have the interest of the small organic farmer or the organic consumer in mind. And the other thing is that as we developed these standards over the years, say back in 1990 to 2002, most of us didn't know that much about the climate crisis. We didn't understand that agriculture was a major contributor to greenhouse gases. So the standards that were set up, I mean, if we were doing this all over again, for sure, for organic beef or lamb, to be called organic, it would have to be 100% grass-fed. We didn't know back then that the traditional way of raising animals, of raising herbivores, where their diet was 100% grass with no grain, was much better for the animal, healthier food, much better for the environment, and so on. So we also didn't understand that paying lip service in organic to a healthy soil is one thing, but you really have to stay focused on the soil. You can't just grow the same organic crop every year in a monoculture fashion, giant, say a giant farm of organic lettuce. Yeah, you can buy organic lettuce out there. Earthbound Lettuce, for example, is the biggest organic company. But that lettuce, if you do a nutritional analysis of it, it's got less pesticide residues than the chemical lettuce out there on the market, but it's barely more nutritious. So in other words, things like crop rotation, things like keeping the land covered at all times, avoiding tillage or heavy plowing, adding compost and compost tea to the land, growing a diversity of crops on the same farm, you know, combining animals and food crops instead of, you know, hauling in compost from a factory farm to grow organic vegetables. All these things that we know now that we call regenerative, which we call the next stage of organic, we didn't really know then. And if we had a decent government that was responsive to the people, that was really looking at public health and the climate and so on, obviously they would change organic standards to make them more climate friendly, in line with what we know now. But we don't have such a government. And, you know, we're not, we may get a government like that in the future, but we certainly don't have one now. So we're having to take things into our own hands as consumers and organic farmers. And one of the things we have done in the last couple of years is develop higher standards for organic. Things like the regenerative organic certification and the project called the Real Organic Project. And so basically what's happening now is that farms and ranches are starting to get certified to these higher standards. And when they're in the marketplace, they will have not only the USDA organic label, but they'll have a second label as well. Just like you've probably seen organic coffee that has a fair trade certification label on it as well. More and more foods are going to have a regenerative label as well. And so, again, like I said before, consumers have to do a little more homework than we wish they had to do. But you can still find actually more and more organic food and more organic food that's produced locally. Now, really, in all 50 states, and there's 179 countries now around the world where people are growing organic food and, you know, certifying and so on. It doesn't need to be certified, by the way. If an organic farmer is selling just into the local market, like the farm that I manage down in Mexico, and you're not putting your products out wholesale, you know, on the national market, it's important that you're truthful and that you are organic, but you don't have to go. We tell farmers you don't have to go to the extra expense and work of getting certified organic if you're selling locally and you really are organic. And what you have around the world developing are a bunch of, they're like community controlled organic certification systems, or producer-guided systems, PGH systems they're called. And these are committees, like we have one in north central Mexico, and there's committees all across Mexico, where farmers and consumers and retailers get together and basically, you know, develop rules, organic rules, develop procedures for checking on farmers, and develop rules for how you discipline people who are going to lie about this. And this works really well. I mean, if you look at, there's 750 million farmers in the world, only 2.5 million of them are certified organic under national organic certification systems. But really, there's probably 50 to 100 million farmers and ranchers around the world who are producing in an organic manner and supplying high quality food to their families, their communities, their regions. And we don't care whether people are certified or not. We just want them to go organic and to go even beyond organic to regenerative. And if we do that, And we link up with all the other movements across the world, the climate movement, the environmental movement, the social justice movement, the movement to protect forests, the movement to protect oceans, the groups trying to stop forced migration, the peace groups. If we link our issues together and connect the dots, what we will see is that food and farming, which is the biggest industry in the whole world, bigger even than the military-industrial complex, is key. And it's key to all of our issues. Migration, for example. I work a lot now in Mexico and Central America on this issue. We say from forced migration to regeneration. When you look at the people who are forced migrants, who are, by the millions, leaving Africa, leaving certain countries in Asia, leaving countries in Latin America and Central America, and moving north, why are these people moving? Most of them don't wake up one day and say, I think I'll reject my family and my home and everything I've ever known and go to a foreign country where I don't even speak the language and where I'm going to be treated as a second-class citizen. And get on welfare. That's not what's going on. What's going on is that people are being forced to leave their areas by, number one, poverty, number two, violence and drug gangs and this fake drug war and, idiotic foreign policy by the U.S. and Europe, where we go into a country like Libya, where we don't like the dictator, Gaddafi, and we say, well, we're going to overthrow him. And then we proceed to overthrow the dictator and we get someone even worse. We've done that in Iraq. We've done that in Syria. We've done that in Afghanistan. We've done that all over the globe. And it's a total disaster. And so people have no choice. In many cases, they're migrating. So what's the solution to migration? Well, should we just open the borders and say, yeah, we'll take a couple hundred million more people. Anyone who wants to come, come on. That is, the ethical thing to do is if people seeking asylum whose lives are in danger, who really do need to escape, yes, everyone deserves asylum. But we don't want to have a condition to where people have to leave their homeland. Down in Mexico and Central America, where I've worked off and on for the last 40 years, the terrible thing about forced migration is that it drains the country of a lot of the most creative and adventurous young people. It's like these people have left and have gone to the big cities or U.S. or Canada and left their communities without the kind of leadership they would have had. And so, if you ask migrants in the U.S., would you like to be able to go home? The overwhelming majority of them would say yes. If you ask most young people who are still in their home countries and adults, would you like to be able to stay in your community? Yeah, maybe you can go visit the U.S. or you can go visit Europe on a tourist visa. But, people are leaving because of poverty, violence, and war. If we want to solve the immigration crisis, we're not going to do it building a multi-billion-dollar wall, that's for sure. The only way to solve it is to work together as a global community to create prosperity in rural areas and really all areas. And that's a position where it'd be pretty hard to find someone who doesn't agree with that, whether they voted for Trump or Hillary or someone like me who voted for the Green Party or someone who didn't vote at all. We all agree that, if migrants in the U.S. would like to go home, a lot of them, and if migrants thinking of moving up here, whether it's legal or not, would rather not, let's deal with that. And dealing with that is really, it's dealing with agriculture is the fundamental issue. Dealing with the drug war, dealing with the violence. It is so ridiculous at this point that we have a movement in the United States for drug legalization that is not working with real closely with the migrant justice movement. That we have a drug legalization movement and a migrant justice movement that aren't really working with the international organic movement and the climate movement. It's like all of our issues are interconnected. We have a crisis of the system. We literally have the advent of what can only be called 21st century fascism in this country. And it's starting to develop in Europe as well. And a major driving force in this fascist movement is the pressure of millions of people migrating up from their home countries up north. And yes, it's racism as well, but it is a function of not having a global perspective in hand and of having idiotic foreign policy like regime change and the war on drugs that don't accomplish anything other than make things worse. And so, you know, we are the Organic Consumers Association, but we also try to work with groups across the activist rainbow. We try to connect the dots between all the issues. And we finally have to, we got to get back to where we were in the late 60s and early 70s, where we had a global youth movement that knew that we had to work on a global scale. We knew back in the late 60s, Russia, the Russian people are not our enemy. You know, the Chinese people are not our enemy. The Iranian people are not our enemy. The young people we met from those countries, they knew the American people are not our enemy. The German people are not our enemy. It's the governments and the transnational corporations that keep us divided. And we need to talk about that. I mean, you can't be a food activist and sit back and say, oh, yeah, the U.S. just passed a $700 billion military budget and think that that doesn't matter. I mean, we're scrambling for nickels and dimes to help small farmers and ranchers go organic. And meanwhile, billions and trillions of dollars are wasted on war and armaments. And the Democrats, because every single congressional district in the United States has a military-industrial component to their economy that creates lots of jobs and so on and so forth, they're all complicit in that. And they're all complicit when we come down to regime change. Typically, there's very few people in Congress who stand up and speak up against these wars. And it's got to change. We've all got to be peace activists, but we all need to be food and climate activists as well. Or we're not going to get where we want to go.
So you're my kind of guy, because I just had to ask one question and you took care of a lot of other questions I was going to ask. So this is, I want to clarify this point and tell me if I'm correct. So if I'm a consumer, I get a USDA certified organic product. It's not going to be grown from a GMO seed, correct?
Right.
It's not going to have been irradiated, correct?
Right.
It won't have been grown using sludge, so waste sludge, sewage sludge. It will not have been grown using synthetic fertilizers or pesticides, correct?
That's right. And the animals would not have received drugs, antibiotics, or hormones, or steroids to make them grow faster. And also the animals are, in theory, supposed to have free access to the outdoors and be able to practice their natural behavior.
And also the animals will not have been fed GMOs, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's
now,
right.
But the products are grown with chemicals. But these are chemicals, and there's quite a list of them that have been approved under the organic standards, correct?
Yes, there are naturally occurring substances that are allowed in organic, and then there's about 100 synthetic ingredients that have to be looked at one by one that are allowed to be used in organic if They can be shown to be relatively benign, A, and B, if there's no commercially available natural or organic alternative on the market. So this system worked pretty well from 2002 until a few years ago, but then the big corporations got involved in this so-called national list, and they've made it much easier to add new synthetic substances to the approved list, A, and B, they've made it more difficult for the National Organic Standards Board that's supposed to be representing the organic community, not just the industry, to take things off the list. So again, a lot of us are really frustrated, and, you know, I mean, would it be the same if Bernie Sanders were in the White House today and both houses of Congress were controlled by Democrats, where a certain percentage of the Democrats were actually pretty radical? I think we'd be going in the right direction, but we're not. We don't have that situation. And so we need to, we don't want to tell consumers that organic doesn't matter anymore and go ahead and buy factory farm stuff and cheap food and eat at fast food restaurants, because that's not true. It's not good for you. It's not good for the planet, and so on. But we do need to get out the point that get out there and try to find local producers for your organic food. Get to know the farmers. Get to know the producers. It makes a hell of a lot of difference whether you buy your food in a consumer food co-op, for example, which is where I've always shopped since the late 1960s, really, for my food if I'm in a city. It makes a hell of a lot of difference if you're shopping at a food co-op or an organic farmer's market than if you're asking someone at Walmart or Costco, is this really organic? You know, or where does this come from? It says organic on the label, but is this from China or is this, you know, USA made? So where you buy your food, whether or not you can actually talk to producers. And I mean, you know, we've all got the access to the internet nowadays. Frankly, it's not overwhelmingly difficult to find true organic, you know, even regenerative foods if you do your homework. But, you know, easier said than done.
Okay, so if we want to talk about maybe some failings of the organic movement, they've lost the focus on soil health. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
They have.
Some are getting it back, but
right.
It was in the law, but it wasn't being enforced that you have to improve the soil on a continuous basis every year. That's what the standards say. But if you ask an organic certifier, are you really checking soil samples to see if a farmer has more soil organic matter in the soil this year than they had last year, and, you know, so on? Are you checking the food with a Brix meter for nutrition and so on and so forth? No, that needs to be, you know, the spirit of the law needs to be put into practice.
Okay, another failing would be, tell me if I'm correct, that we've moved away from treating animals as humanely as the original as was originally intended. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, if you look at reports by the Cornucopia Institute, for example, what you'll find is that most organic dairies are doing things the right way. Most organic poultry, egg producers, or broiler people are doing things the right way. People raising sheep and goats and so on. That's the number of farmers, right, who are organic. The problem is the big players, for example, in the poultry sector, the dozen or so big operations that produce USDA-labeled organic eggs, these are not organic. These are organic in name only. The same thing for the largest organic milk producers, with the exception of Organic Valley. You know, people like Aurora, who supply Walmart and Costco and the big supermarket stores, you know, a lot of Horizon Organic milk, it's organic in name only. These are factory farms that feed the animals organic grain. And then, you know, we had a tremendous scandal a couple of years ago about fake organic grains being imported into the U.S., especially soybeans, which were the, you know, the feed for these giant factory farm organic operations. You know, there was such an uproar in that in this year, 2018, so far, there's been a lot less importing of foreign organic soybeans and a lot less fraud. So, but there's no guarantee that this situation will continue. So we've got to push for, we need to produce as much organic food locally and regionally as we can. If you can't find something locally or regionally, the next priority is at least USA made.
Okay.
You know, the next priority would, and so on.
So let me also say perhaps another failing was that the original intention was to have a robust group of smaller farmers who really cared about what they're doing instead of an industry that became more and more factory farms, very large monoculture farms, and so on. Would you agree that's been a bit of a failing?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm glad when I first started doing organic organizing back in 1992, the entire market for organic, certified organic in the U.S. was $1 billion. $1 billion. Today, certified organic is $50 billion in the U.S. It's grown 50-fold. And then there's a heck of a lot of grass-fed and food that's actually organic that isn't certified. So we have grown the alternative food system and farming system considerably. But what we didn't do properly is, just like every sector of the economy in the United States, big corporations rule. And we've got to get these big corporations, cut them down to size, and get consumers to stop buying their products and put your money where you know the people deserve it.
But isn't it true, Ronnie, that these large corporations control, what, 95% plus of the organic production in this country now? Isn't that true?
No, it's not that high. Well, some of the companies have bought out brands that actually are still doing things the same way, like General Mills. I mean, I wish Annie's had stayed independent, but they were bought by General Mills. But General Mills has been smart enough to let them continue to operate more or less the same, in the same fashion they did before. So just because a big company owns an organic brand doesn't necessarily mean, I don't like that. I don't like to buy Honest Tea anymore because it's, you know, purchased by Coca-Cola. But Honest Tea is still made the same way, or still grown, the tea, the same way it used to be, and so on and so forth.
Okay, but I believe that it's well over, I think it's at least 90%, but even more than that, of the organic grocery items that you would find.
Oh, grocery items, yeah. The processed foods and so on and so forth are under the control of the big brands. There's a chart called Who Rules Organic, or Who Owns Organic. Cornucopia Institute has the chart on their site, and it's pretty alarming to look at that. But I know my shopping, you know, I live part of the time when I'm in the U.S., I live part of the time in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and part of the time way north up here in Finland, Minnesota. And so I do all my food shopping that I don't grow myself, or that I don't buy at the organic farmers market. I buy it at the co-ops. And I don't have to buy hardly any corporate, you know, organic, because they have available, you know, instead of Horizon Milk, I can get Super Kelowna, which is Amish farmers in Iowa who are not only organic but are grass-fed, and so on and so forth. So, again, you got to do your homework. Look beyond the brand, look at who owns it, and look on the internet, and, you know, and we got to keep the pressure up. I mean, an even bigger problem than degrading organic standards is the confusion among consumers in the United States that natural means the same thing as organic. And the majority of consumers actually believe that all natural means better than organic. And when you look out in the marketplace, you know, the majority of meat and animal products, meat, dairy, poultry, are marketed as natural, as, you know, hormone or antibiotic free or, you know, whatever, as nutritious, healthy. And consumers are continuing to buy massive amounts. I mean, organic is only 5-7% of the market. It's more of the produce market, 15% of fruits and vegetables. But the problem is that we let corporations lie on their labels, in their marketing, and that people, you know, consumers who are stressed economically, if they see an organic product, and then right next to it, a product that says all natural, you know, with a pretty barn on the label, and it's $2 cheaper. Well, I mean, it's like we have to educate consumers better that there is a difference, and we have to educate them as to be able to purchase them. But, you know, there's also major factors, too, like people have got to stop eating out in restaurants so much and get back to eating at home, learning how to cook. If you don't know how to cook, again, cooking from scratch. If you cook from scratch, you know, and you eat healthy, organic foods are actually cheaper than the junk foods that people are wolfing down every day. But again, easier said than done. If you don't know how to cook, if you don't feel comfortable in the kitchen, you got to try. And I mean, the one nice thing about the internet nowadays, you want to know how to cook something, look it up on the internet. It'll tell you exactly what to do. But don't just keep passing up that kale and the chard, you know, in the grocery store that's organic or the farmer's market because you don't know how to cook it. Because if you learn how to cook it, you know, you'll have really good food, you'll have really good health, and you'll actually spend less money. You go out and buy a bunch of processed organic foods at Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, you're going to spend a fortune.
So in the 10 minutes or so we have left, I'd like to cover just a couple more things. And about this labeling things. So all natural basically is a meaningless term to me, but it supposedly refers to minimally processed, which can mean lots of things. But also grass-fed. Grass-fed by itself can be played with a lot. So it has to be 100% grass-fed and also grass-finished. So people are using this term grass-fed if the animal's on pasture a certain amount of time, and then it may be fed GMO grains another part of the time. So I always ask, okay, in your grass-fed beef, is it 100% grass-fed? Is it grass-finished? Well, in the wintertime, what do you feed it? And, you know, if they feed it corn silage and with hay, then likely they're being fed GMO. So there, you have to be very careful even about that.
Got to be grass-fed. Got to be 100% grass-fed. And again, when you have aware consumers and you have a block of producers like Minneapolis, St. Paul, we have 120 restaurants right now in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where you can get 100% grass-fed beef. It's on the menu. And we have, you know, you can ask the waiters, you can say, where does this come from? And they'll tell you, oh, yeah, this is Thousand Hills or, you know, another producer. But why is it like this in Minneapolis, St. Paul? It's because we've got the biggest network of retail cooperatives, organic and natural food cooperatives in the country. We've got a very active, vocal movement. We got a lot of organic farmers in the upper Midwest, and we've got a consciousness about the reason why you want to eat 100% grass-fed beef if you're a carnivore is because it's good for you. Factory farm beef is not good for you. You should stop eating it 100%.
It's also good for the earth. It's also good for the earth. And it's turning. It's an amazing machine. It turns grass into meat. But I want to stress this point too, Ronnie. That I always ask these people that say it's 100% grass-fed, you know, and the cattle is being raised in the north. I say, what do you feed it during the winter?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, and why aren't you certified by the American Grass-Fed Association, you know, like 1,000 other ranchers across the country? It's not that difficult to get certified if you really are grass-fed. And that's what we're telling people.
So then what does the American Grass-Fed Association say you have to feed the animals during the winter?
100%. 100% but, grass. All you can feed them in the winter is forage or hay that you cut, you know, that's grass. You cannot feed them any grains because, you know, any grains, you know, it leaves it wide open. And it's not good. It's the end product is not good. I mean, there have been studies shown that just feeding animals all grass the last 5 days of their life drastically reduces the amount of E. coli 0157H, a virulent pathogen. It's like it makes animals sick. It makes herbivores sick to feed them grain. And that's all there is to it. Stop eating meat, you know, and consuming dairy products from cows that are not grass-fed. And, we're lucky in the Midwest, too. I go to the co-op. I mean, I buy raw milk in a underground distribution system off a 100% grass-fed dairy. But when I'm in between times or if I'm in the city, I can go into a co-op and I can find not only organic milk, but grass milk, which is what Organic Valley calls their 100% grass-fed, or else other brands like Maple Hill Super Kelowna, so on. So we need to move. USDA organic standards for beef and dairy are not good enough, but there are standards like American Grass-Fed Association that are good, and that we've got to start doing that. Again, if you're buying from a farmer locally that you know, like I know the guy up the Highway 61 who's got the dairy that produces the raw milk. You know, I've visited his farm. I know him. This place has been grass-fed for 100 years, several generations. The dairy industry's tried to close this guy down for many years because he sells higher quality, raw milk. I mean, pasteurized milk is basically not good for you, you know, and pasteurized and homogenized milk, even if it's organic or ultra pasteurized, not that good for you. That's why you want to, if you're lucky enough to live in a state like Maine or some of the other states, California, where you can buy raw milk and dairy legally, by all means, do so. If you're in a state where they call you a criminal because you don't want pasteurized milk, you got to work for it. And we've got bills in the Congress. We're trying to change some of this, but it's a huge industry. The dairy lobby, and also, you know, Organic Valley has not been good on the raw milk issue. They won't let their farmers and their co-op sell raw milk. And even though they'll all tell you, yeah, well, I drink it. You know, I drink the raw milk from my cows. But, you know, the government would come down on us and crush the cooperative, $1 billion cooperative, if we, you know, took a strong stand on raw milk. I mean, I can partly understand that, but I don't understand pretending that you don't know that raw milk is far superior to pasteurized milk, and homogenization is a nightmare. No milk should be homogenized, and basically people are eating too much meat and animal products in general. If you read a newsletter like Mercola or something, you'll see that even if you're eating the healthiest grass-fed meat and dairy, you know, eat it in moderation. I mean, our diet should be mainly plants, mainly food cooked from scratch and with a certain amount of protein, of course, but don't overdo it, you know, and it'd be better for your health, the environment, and so on.
So we have just a couple minutes left. Let me ask this very important question to you, because I was at a conference where I asked this of a lady that is quite well known, who's on the Organic Standards Board. And I said, okay, so we know that to be organic certified, you can't be using GMO seed. You can't be feeding the animals GMO, and you can't be using glyphosate on your crops. You can't be using it as a desiccant post-harvestly. In post-harvest. But what is the standard for how much GMO and how much glyphosate is allowed in a product that's on the shelf that claims to be organic?
Well, what you're supposed to do, say you're an organic certifier, okay? If you think that there is a possible problem with GMO residues or herbicide residues, pesticide residues on a farm, because there's a GMO farmer next door, for example, or for any other reason, you are supposed to require testing of that product, okay? And the problem with the way our system of certification is set up is that certifiers, unlike in certain European countries, where they're paid by the government or by the industry to be certifiers so that they're third-party objective. In our country, you have to tell your customer, you know what, I'm afraid you might have some residues. I'm going to make you test that. Well, I mean, what's your customer going to do? They're going to switch to another certifier, you know. So we've got an inherent problem with certifiers wanting to do a good job, and yet if you do too good of a job, you might lose your livelihood. So we have regulations that are supposed to call for lab testing, but it's very infrequent that a certifier forces a farmer or rancher to, you know, submit to lab tests. They should do it, but they're not doing it, and it's because their livelihood depends on getting paid by the people that they're certifying. So
which brings me now to this non-GMO label, this organization that, you know, is having more and more prolific, the non-GMO,
mm-hmm.
which also is even appearing on organic, along with organic labels, which is supposed to be non-GMO. But they even, I think they even allow a certain percentage, right? Isn't it 0.9%? And even on some products, up to 3% of GMO residue in the products that they're certifying as non-GMO?
Yeah, they pick the. There is a level of inadvertent contamination going on out there. The European Union allows 0.9 of 1% if you can show that you weren't deliberately, you know, contaminating the product. And so non-GMO project, but non-GMO project, because they tried to get me on the board when they first started. They originally said, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to make people who, you know, claim to be natural or all natural test and make sure they're non-GMO, A, and we're going to root out inadvertent GMO contamination in the organic supply line. Well, that sounded pretty good, but what they turned out in practice to be was a greenwashing service for companies that aren't organic. And then they created a situation where the label is so popular that even certified organic companies put both the organic and GMO, a lot of them do that. And we've tried to tell companies, don't do that. You confuse people, because now if you do a poll, which there have been polls, a lot of consumers think non-GMO means it's organic, or it's just as good as organic. And of course, if you do residue testing on many non-GMO certified products, you'll find a lot of pesticides. So I do not buy a product that, you know, says non-GMO unless it's also organic. And, you know, I've tried to, everyone has tried, but it's now, you know, it's a $35 billion industry, the non-GMO label, and it's everywhere. And what we have to point out to consumers is that USDA organic is better in most instances than non-GMO, but that there's even a new, more advanced stage of organic that you need to be looking for, things like biodynamic certified organic, Demeter, things like 100% grass-fed, American Grass-Fed Association, and, you know, pay attention to local and regional and get to know your farmer and do your homework. You know, labels are only useful to a certain extent, and we've got to turn that around.
And one of the best places to get your education is at the Organic Consumers Association website. It's organicconsumers.org. Ronnie Cummins is an exceptional person. He's been working very hard to help people understand more about their food, the integrity of the food, and helping to keep organic standards real. He's the international director and founder of the Organic Consumers Association, and it is a very, very rich website. I want to ask one thing. There's a link on here, organicconsumers.org/organlink, but I don't know where that is in the menu, but that's a very, very rich section of your website. How do I get to that from your heading? Is that under topics? Is it under campaigns? Is it under projects?
It may be under campaigns. Scroll through all the campaigns and look at the description of those, because we do have, you know, there's several hundred thousand articles archived on the site over the last 20 years, and it's hard to make them all visible in the same way. But you can look at the daily news feeds are the by campaign sections. And if you're interested in, you know, the regenerative organic, the new next stage of organic, right on our homepage there is an international organization that we helped found called Regeneration International. So you can go to that site as well.
Ronnie, thank you so much for spending time with us. I really appreciate your efforts. I'll continue to support you. I urge the Solaria subscribers to do the same, and you've created a wonderful resource for us at organicconsumers.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Keep up the good work.
Okay, sir.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.